WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Punch those numbers into your phone. Please call us. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, new revelations about shenanigans at the Central Intelligence Agency.
Mm-hmm.
What they mean for you, whether or not you need to be concerned about any of this, and what they've been up to lately.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's not a good look.
It is not a good look.
Yeah.
At all.
They're busy over at Langley.
Yes.
Causing some problems.
Yes, indeed. And causing some problems, interestingly, with off-the-shelf solutions, apparently. So that should be interesting to discuss. 855-915-9636. That is the phone number. Find us online, facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. Nothing really to kick us off with this week.
Right?
You know, it's just... This...
No bashing Lisa on losing the Oscars. No, yeah.
Well, I don't bash you. I bash you out of a tremendous amount of love and affection.
This year, I will give it to you. I failed epically.
No, you didn't fail. Let's be honest. The Academy failed epically. The Academy failed to give the right movies the awards, which is why we didn't get everything right.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Because we are actually smarter than them.
We are. They just don't realize it, and they insist on going their own way. So.
But how are you? Are you well?
That's
the reaction that I usually anticipate from you.
One of my gums just swelled up to like 20 times its normal size. I don't know what's going on with that.
And have you been doing what I've always said to you when you come to me with this?
No, I mean, this happened literally on my way to the station. Okay. So, yeah.
So somebody come to the studio with some salt and warm water fast.
No, I'll get at it with the salt and the warm water after the beer later tonight.
I was going to say, are you planning on drinking just a really
absolutely.
Salty beer?
Absolutely. Yeah. Do they have salty beer?
Yeah.
I figure if anyone would know that, it would be you.
Yeah, I mean, you could. There's always those people that, you know, put the salt and the lime and the Corona or the Dos Equis.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So I may pass out in the middle
shameful.
Of the show. We'll find out.
Oh, perfect.
That would be interesting.
This is all my plan.
Yeah.
Full takeover.
Well, we'll see how you do with me slumped over the console,
right.
Which I imagine will not be.
Just move your fingers up and down on the controls.
I imagine it won't be terribly good, but yeah. So, with all that in mind, let the fun begin. Lisa Nichols, what's going on in the world?
Yes, well, in local news, we learned Southie Parade organizers face backlash after rejection of gay group. The decision to bar a gay veterans group from the St. Paddy's Day Parade in South Boston, possibly over a late application, has sparked a swift backlash from veterans and politicians and promptly, hastily arranged meetings Wednesday to persuade parade organizers to reverse their position. Mayor Marty Wall said he will not march in the parade on March 19th in protest. And Boston firefighter Dan Magoon, an Iraq and Afghanistan combat veteran who is the executive director of the Massachusetts Fallen Heroes, resigned as parade marshal. Quote, "I will not tolerate discrimination in our cities in any form. We are one Boston, which means we are fully inclusive city," Walsh said in a statement and continued, quote, "I will not be marching in the parade unless this is resolved. Anyone who values what our city stands for should do the same." The anger began after Allied War Veterans Council, which organizes the South Boston Parade for years, barred gay groups from marching, voted 9-4 on Tuesday to ban Out Vets, an organization of LGBT veterans. Magoon, who voted in favor of Out Vets, said his decision to resign was a no-brainer. Quote, "I will do my role in the veterans community is to work with all the veterans. At the end of the day, you have served your country. A veteran is a veteran in my eyes, and I would never turn away a veteran because who they are." Yeah, so once again, haven't we resolved this? Haven't we discussed this on the show before?
I mean,
is this really where we are?
I am stunned that we're even having this conversation again. I thought this had been worked out years ago.
Exactly like in the words of Mr. Magoon said, this is a no-brainer.
Apparently it has not been worked out, despite what, you know, everybody was promised.
Yeah. No, I mean, kind of a refresher for our listeners. We did discuss this a couple years ago when they were trying to have out veterans march in the parade. And that was in the time of, was that... Walsh administration? No,
yes.
That was...
No, that was...
Menino.
That was Menino. Mm-hmm. Fought with them to get this done. And, you know, for the first couple of years, the Walsh administration, no problem. They were in. Now, all of a sudden, it's, nope, we can't have a march. I don't understand the thinking.
A few years ago was the actual year when this all came about, because the conversation started, so many out veterans already marched. Why is this even becoming a problem? Well, because they wanted a designated float to be marching in the parade with their flags and everything. And luckily that did get passed. There were a lot of people that were protesting. There were a lot of people that were contemplating pulling sponsorship from it. And of course, the minute you talk about sponsors and different groups not agreeing with it, they change suit and say, no, absolutely. Why is this coming up again? That's such a basic question. Why are we even here as a city? And seeing where it's almost like we're reverberating everything that we said before. Seeing the strides that especially this country has made with rights for gay, lesbian, transgender, and we're here still.
Yeah, and I don't... Who is doing this? Mm-hmm. Who is doing this and why? I understand this is a private parade. You have the Supreme Court of the United States upholding your right to exclude anybody that you want from your parade. It's your right as an organizer. It's a private event, okay? At the same time, you're in Boston, okay? This is a somewhat progressive town, in case you hadn't noticed. And the way that I look at it, whether you're gay, straight, trans, whatever, if you have worn the uniform of the United States military, if you have served our country, if you have sat in a foxhole with someone and defended them as your brother, you have a right to walk in that parade.
Absolutely. End it doesn't matter what your religion is, what your sexual orientation is, what color, creed, anything.
Where is the band of brothers while this is going on? It infuriates me that we even have to talk about this.
That we have a group that voted 9-4. So what you're telling me, there's 13 people that are deciding the whole... And are they naive to even what the St. Patty's Day parade in Southie is anymore? Basically, it's just an excuse for every millennial that has transcended in South Boston to party and, you know, walk in the streets drunk.
Yeah.
And I get it. You still want to uphold the legacy of being one of the oldest St. Patty's Day parade. Is it? It might actually be the oldest.
I think it is. Have they...
In the entire country?
No. The first one ever was held in New Amsterdam.
Okay.
Currently known as New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's how...
But that's what they tout themselves on, being one of the oldest parades and having such historic value to Boston.
Sure.
It makes you scratch your head and just say, no, that's shameful. That's why.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's South Boston. We got a lot of Catholics over there. We know what the Catholic Church says about
South Boston is so incredibly gentrified. I think these 13 people that are voting are the only actual people maybe over the age of 50 that still live in South Boston.
This is it. I mean, you got some folks from the old neighborhood who are like, we're going to keep the old neighborhood the way the old neighborhood was, and mm-hmm. we're not going to have those gays marching in our parade. Stop it.
Again, I feel like I said this last time, what do they think this is going to be? Like the gay pride parades in the South End?
No.
Over the summer, everything's shooting confetti. And
I remember...
There's people, these are respectful men and women that are dressed in their uniforms that aren't just want to walk, but be proud of who they are and the country that they served in. And you're stopping that.
Well, there was the one year that they let them march, but said you can't wear any outrageous
yes.
outfits.
But you can't wear any political signs. This is crazy. What are you going to wear? Shamrock castles?
No,
this isn't what they're trying to do or push.
No rainbow flags and assless chaps if you want to march in the parade, is basically what they said. Look. I don't know what the big deal is.
And again, the city of Boston, what scrambles today to try to... It's always a couple days before the parade. And you're going to give me the excuse because of a late application? Come on.
No. It's because these guys sit on it until the end so that they can get away with mm-hmm. it. Because if they had announced it back in January, there would have been a month of pressure coming down on them. And that gives the city the opportunity to pull permits and to pull security detail and to say, we're not going to let you have this.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty Wallace doesn't want to get in the middle of that argument anyway. You know, as it is, he cannot show up and basically keep everybody happy. He doesn't want to be in a position where he's got to say to the organizers of this parade, no, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Because then the Irish are going to turn on him and all the union people in Southie are going to turn on him.
The union, yeah.
And yeah, 39% mm-hmm. of Southie is union. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful out there.
One thing that I'm going to give some sort of praise to Marty Walsh, like he is making the right decision.
Oh, yeah.
Because one thing that he does do is he plays favors to his constituents, what he thinks is right. So a large voting is many of the illegals here in Boston.
Here's my advice.
He says you can stay in City Hall. I'm surprised today he wasn't saying, oh, all the gay veterans, you can stay and march in City Hall.
Maybe they'll have a parade in City Hall Plaza with just out veterans. Here's my advice to the organizers of the Southie Parade. Most people in Boston do not share your hatred of the gay community. You have 364 other days of the year when you can hate the gays freely and no one's going to say anything. Suck it up for the one day and let out veterans march.
This shouldn't even be a discussion.
If you understood how veterans should get along with each other and the contributions that they've made, you wouldn't have an issue with them marching.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have an issue at all. There shouldn't be an issue. This shouldn't be a conversation. Okay? Let them march. But no, and guess what? We'll go through this again next year. It's a sure sign of spring in Boston. Sullivan's opens, the crocus come up, and the gays are banned for marching in the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Mm-hmm.
Spring in New England.
Typical timeline in March.
In national news, Democrats and Republicans have found common ground in Washington, opposition to a new bill that would replace Obamacare. The bill, which would replace the individual mandate with tax credits and still require treatment of pre-existing conditions and allow children as old as 26 to stay on their parents' health plans, has been slammed on both sides of the aisle. Democrats claim it will rob millions of Americans of their health insurance due to new limits in Medicare, while conservative Republicans have slammed it as a costly new entitlement program. Nobody likes this thing.
More fighting in Washington. Exactly what we need.
Nobody was ever going to like this thing. This was how Obamacare began, for those of you who can remember that far back. They put the bill out there. Everybody hated it. 2 years later, some version of it got passed.
Mm-hmm.
And that same idiot Gruber, who came up with the individual mandate, is back in the news again.
Now, mind you, this is the man who wrote it. And during the time of writing it, said, this isn't going to work. This is going to be bad for the people. But continued to write it for Washington and have it be passed into law.
This is MIT economics professor Stanley Gruber, who is once again saying, well, without the individual mandate, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It fails. And it's like, the individual mandate fails. This whole thing fails. Okay?
Now, do they have a name for it? Because aren't they calling it the American Care Act? Because this came out on Monday with sort of how it was going to be. And everybody's saying, Donald Trump especially, has played his whole campaign on repealing it and getting rid of Obamacare and talking about how bad it was. But although Republicans' efforts to undo this whole thing, it's not as simple as it may seem to completely repeal it or get rid of it. It would have to have some support from Democrats, which is not happening. I believe it's 60 votes. And with the maneuver that they're using now, they're trying to change it, which only, in a simple version, only needs a little support from Democrats.
I heard one senator, it might have been Rand Paul, refer to the bill as a dog. That's his name for it. He called it the dog.
Yeah, Rand Paul's back in the news.
And another senator referred to it as horse excrement, which I believe is similar to the horse shirt. Yes, so he thinks the bill is a horse shirt. Haven't heard, some people are calling it Trump Care, but it doesn't really have a name yet.
There's been a lot of grappling.
Trump's folly might be a good name for it.
From Republicans and saying if Democrats go against it, that is going to be big, big problems for when a lot of them come up for re-election. And you want to talk about having some sort of majority in the House and Senate. A couple of years, it's going to be a lot of Republicans.
Could we just take over health care in this country? Could we get rid of private health care? Could we have Medicare for everybody? Could we have single payer, please?
In a perfect world, what would you imagine for health care?
Medicare for everybody.
Is that even plausible? I mean, could that happen?
Yes. It is a deduction from your paycheck. Okay? It goes into a pool. Everybody's covered from birth.
Then why are they saying that so much money is being spent on Medicaid right now that when I get older, there's pretty much going to be no money left?
Because what's happened? Because Medicaid is imbalanced right now. The way that Medicaid...
And is there a way to solve that?
Medicaid was originally intended to be an entitlement for retired Americans. So you'd get your pension to keep a roof over your head, and then Medicaid would pay your medical expenses. And Medicaid was based on the idea that young workers paying in support old workers who are collecting.
Mm-hmm.
We have an imbalance in this country to an extent. It's so far not as bad as people thought it was going to be.
Well, where we have so many older people that are sick.
The baby boomers, who are all over getting over to be over 65, are in theory leaving the workforce and collecting, while what's left, Generation X, Millennials, Generation Z, whatever the heck they're doing over there, has to pay in. So there's an imbalance in pay in and collect. But if you make it everybody, if everybody's paying in, you solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security has this issue as well.
But I'm confused with what you're saying is everybody's paying in. Isn't that the whole basis of what Medicaid was about? You just said you pay in as a worker, so that when you retire, you get it back.
Yes.
Now, what would be the difference of what you were just saying where everybody's paying in?
The difference would be that you would have this coverage for your entire life. So that the whole way that insurance works, the whole way that insurance is profitable.
Isn't that essentially insurance without the insurance company?
Well, that's what Medicaid is. And the whole way that insurance is profitable is if insurance companies can sit there and say, we don't want to cover any sick people. Please don't let any sick people buy our insurance and give us a mechanism to kick them off before they get old and actually need it. So in that sense, Medicare is one of the best things that ever happened to the insurance industry in the United States of America. It facilitates private insurance. And when private insurance companies started kicking off all the chronically mentally ill and people with disabilities, then Medicare stepped in and started offering benefits for them as well. Okay, so Medicare is already covering a lot of people it was never intended to cover, because the insurance industry buys senators and buys representatives and buys legislation.
Is that essentially what was happening with Obamacare and why premiums spiked? Because so many young people weren't putting the money in, whereas you had this influx of elderly people that are trying to use the services. Well, and
this is exactly what happened.
Have the needs for
it. They like to tout the fact that 20 million Americans now have health insurance who didn't have it before. What they don't talk about is how many of those people qualified under expanded Medicare in states that allowed that to happen, because that was essentially an unfunded mandate under Obamacare. They said, if you can't do anything else, expand your Medicare and let the poor in.
Mm-hmm.
And states did that, and they're going to have to figure out how to pay for it now. The Affordable Care Act provided funding for the first 3 years. Well, that's out the door now. The insurance companies that got into it walked into states like Mississippi and Alabama and Arizona, where everybody's fat and everybody's in lousy health or everybody's elderly, and they looked around and they were like, we can't make any money here. Mm-hmm. All the sick people are signing up. All the poor people are signing up. The young, healthy people aren't in this state. They all left. So we got to get out. So they've pulled out of the exchanges, which is why you have places. There's a county in Arizona that has one provider. And if you're the one provider, you can charge whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work. It failed.
So in some areas, it's becoming a monopoly for some of these insurance providers that are able to sustain staying in these environments where there's a lot of people.
Correct.
In need.
Now, what Trump has put forward in theory sounds really good, because pre-existing conditions are still covered,
which was part of Obamacare. Yes.
26-year-old adults get to stay on mommy and daddy's health insurance. Really, they should be kicked off when they're 21. If you're 21 and you're still on mommy and daddy's health insurance, you're not a complete adult. Okay.
I can understand going through grad school.
No.
Or,
okay.
If you are in school.
If you have a job and you're over 21, get off of mommy and daddy's health insurance and enter the adult world and see what it's like. And stop having somebody else pay half of your bills. And then maybe you'll understand why people like me get upset when taxes go up.
Well, that's half the problem with millennials now.
And when things,
they try to...
Yeah, it's because mommy and daddy are foot the bill for half of everything for the millennials. And
please continue to tell me how hard your life is not paying for half of your bills.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it.
Now,
all of these wind up being gimmies to the insurance companies. So what Trump has proposed is we're going to get rid of the individual mandate. We're going to get rid of the subsidies, tax credits. You're going to get tax credits. And in theory, it sounds pretty generous. If you're single, making less than $75,000 a year, you get tax credits. Married couples making less than $150,000 a year, you get tax credits. You get tax credits up to $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are paying somewhere in the vicinity of $800 to $1,000 a month for our health insurance. So if I'm spending $12,000 a year and I get $8,000 in tax credits, this comes right off my taxes. Then that brings my health insurance cost down to $4,000 a year. Spread that out over 4 months, I'm paying like $325. That's not bad.
Do you think this will combat the hold that many of these insurance companies have?
This is where the details come in. And this is where people start calling the
because
bill.
Because this has become so... Out of control is the way to put it. With the insurance companies, and we've talked about it before, many of these smaller ones have not had the ability to survive against your Aetnas and your Blue Cross.
But some of them have actually done very well on the exchanges. But the insurance companies have gotten into this, and they're now saying, oh, yeah, we're not going to deny coverage for a pre-existing condition. We're just going to cap what we'll pay for it. And we're going to eliminate certain kinds of treatment. They're trying to take drug addiction treatment out. That's not a good thing. They're trying to take long-term care treatment coverage out of Medicare,
mm-hmm.
which is a big problem because that's going to put industries out of business. The insurance companies need to be brought to heel. They need to be sat in a corner and told your days of gouging the American people and upsetting budgets and consuming more and more of the U.S. economy are over. These are your choices. You either offer a fair and affordable plan to anybody who wants it, or it's going to be Medicare for everyone, and then you get nothing.
Which insurance companies don't want.
Right.
Now, if you're looking
at
the side...
No, because that puts them out of business.
Of course, because as we just said, Medicaid is essentially insurance without... the insurance providers.
Which in theory,
because
is
I
what
have,
should
and
happen.
You're completely right in what you're saying. What some insurance companies do, and I've seen it before with, you know, knowing people or knowing friends that have tried to get in rehab programs, what they will cover, trying to get a double prescription, and that you can't get it for another month. I mean, this is something that you need, but because you are under a certain amount of days, you can't get it again.
Right.
And it's like, you act like these people aren't putting money in. We're talking about people that are paying. Again, you just said some of the numbers. $800, $1,000, $1,200 a month. For what? To deal with the hassle of some of these insurance companies? Because essentially, they have written their own rules.
In the insurance,
they have, and they've adjusted to them.
In the insurance company's eyes, you're paying that $12,000 a year for a couple of checkup appointments. With a $10 copay.
Oh, I mean,
you don't
God
even get those for free.
God forbid if you even try to get like a second or third cleaning a year.
Okay. $12,000 a year to go see the doctor twice. Mm-hmm. Most Americans could do the math on that and say, this doctor's visit can't cost me more than $1,000. So.
But that's what's happening.
If I go pay on my own,
it's
better
be cheaper.
Off. I'm $10,000 ahead of the game.
I will absolutely take the risk. And hoping that I don't get injured or have to be out of work for some sickness for a year.
And this is the problem that you have with a for-profit healthcare system. And as long as the insurance companies are involved in this, we live in a for-profit healthcare system. You can talk about hospitals being non-profit all day long. A lot of them are. A lot of them are suffering. Because the insurance companies don't want to pay, Medicare doesn't want to pay, nobody wants to pay.
Now, what about from a doctor's perspective? Where are they really sitting with this?
The doctors...
Does it care as long as you get paid?
The doctors hate this. The doctors...
Hate what? The new...
The doctors hate the new plan. The mm-hmm. doctors hate Obamacare. The doctors want single payer. The American Medical Association came out during the Obamacare debate and said, Medicare for everybody. Set up a single-payer program. Let's end this nonsense. That's all you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it takes a tremendous amount of political will to stand up to these insurance companies who are major employers, who do put a lot of money into the United States economy, who do pour a lot of money into Washington, D.C., and tell them to go kick rocks.
And we have not had an administration before that has stood up to that.
Even if Donald Trump had the inclination to do it, there are still enough members of Congress in the House of Representatives and the Senate who are living large on insurance company lobbying dollars.
Of course.
That they'd block anything like that.
Now, in a perfect world, if you had single-payer health care here in the United States, what are we talking about? And so you and I both, we would be putting in the same exact amount.
It'd cost way less.
Every single month.
It would cost way less.
We're
spending $12,000 a year right now for your health coverage, if you're lucky. You'd probably wind up spending somewhere in the vicinity of five.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't notice it.
Now, what about the credits?
And you wouldn't need tax credits
healthcare
to pay for it. You would need to draw down on what's going into the U.S. Treasury.
When critics say single-payer health care would never work here in the United States, because why?
It's too big. It's too big. You're going to create a new bureaucracy. You're going to create a new entitlement. Yes and yes. Yes. But you're going to take the profit motive out of it, and you're going to have a single point of negotiation with every health system in the United States.
And you're essentially putting the power back in Washington and putting the power back in the people, the patients.
A big part of the reason, and I've explained this before on the show, and I'll explain it again. And if you doubt me on this, you call up your insurance agent, call up a doctor and ask them. A big part of the reason healthcare is so expensive in this country is because providers know that insurance companies will almost never pay 100% of the bill. Okay? They come in and they negotiate. So mm-hmm. The hospital says, this is a $10,000 procedure. The insurance company says, we'll give you six. And the hospital says, well, we're losing money on this. The insurance company says, we'll give you seven. That's our final offer. So to get the $10,000 that the hospital needs to pay its costs, it now has to bill $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 for the procedure so that the insurance company, when it comes back with its lowball offer, will at least cover the basic costs.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going on constantly in our healthcare system. And because the insurance companies keep trying to pay less and less and less, and because the government lets them get away with it, the costs of procedures keep going up and up and up and up. All right? What we are paying for healthcare in this country is absurd.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on any rational cost estimates for anything. If any other aspect of your life was priced the way that healthcare was, you'd be raising the roof. Okay? If you went to get your computer fixed and somebody told you it cost $5,000, you'd lose your mind.
Look at how many statistics come out each year and talking about how much each family or single healthcare payer spends out of their annual salary. What is it now? 1/4?
Yeah.
So we're not even talking about surviving and living and having, you know, shelter and food just on your healthcare alone.
It didn't used to
1/4 of your annual income.
It didn't used to be this way, America. You used to be able to go and see the doctor for $20. $20. Just walk in, book an appointment, and be like, hi, can I see the doctor?
Mm-hmm. I cringe when I hear some of the, and I mean, my copay is significantly high, but then I hear some people that are talking about, try to go to an emergency room, $500.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're being seen right away. You're lucky if you're being seen maybe within 5 hours.
I think I get a $100 copay for ER visits, which is why I'm hoping the salt water works out later, because I really...
So you don't have to go.
I don't want to spend the $100, yeah. Just to get like a $20 penicillin prescription. Ain't worth it.
Which you know you need.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. In world news, a military hospital in Kabul, Afghanistan, was the site of a massacre today as four ISIS gunmen dressed as doctors entered the facility. At least 30 people were killed in the 400-bed hospital, while another 50 were wounded. Two of the attackers used suicide bomb vests, while two more were killed after a gun battle with security forces that lasted several hours. Interesting detail in this, of course, is that they dressed up like doctors.
Yeah.
Here's our terrorist friends doing what they do best once again.
Are you surprised?
No.
There is a new report that came out, and we consider what Saudi Arabia being one of our key U.S. allies here in the Middle East and supplier, ironically, number one supplier of Islamic State terror group in Iraq. That's good.
Yeah.
But nothing's being done about it.
No.
So it's, you know, you really can't have it both ways. You guys are one of our allies. You are our friends. We want to work with you. But you are not taking control of your, what is it now, 30% of ISIS is Saudi Arabian descent.
But that's not the official Saudi position, mind you. That's just a few people that we'll get that under control and everything will be fine.
No, this has been going on for so many years where you have a large amount of people that are coming from, whether we're talking about Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, where they have numbers of men that are fighting for ISIS, but the countries aren't doing anything. And they kind of put up their arms and say, we're not going to control. I mean, the oil fields being one, look at everything that was going on. ISIS controlled oil fields that were running through Turkey, and Turkey's like, we're all about the fight against ISIS. Well, no, you're not. You're running lines under your country.
Yeah, but think about it from Saudi Arabia's perspective. If you've got a bunch of ISIS sympathizers running around in your country.
Yeah, but Saudi Arabia is crying poor with the oil refineries.
But if you've got a bunch of ISIS sympathizers running around in your country, aren't you just going to let them go? Aren't you going to give them $1,000 and say, here, go to Syria, get out. We don't want you here. Because you don't have to say we don't want you here. Just say, go, fight. Mm-hmm. Go fight the jihad. Go be somebody else's problem. Which is basically what they're doing.
But essentially, it comes back at you.
Well,
It's a temporary fix?
This is where the Saudis throw their hands up in the air and say, we don't have any control over what our people do in other countries. We didn't tell them to go there. We don't teach any of this stuff. We don't know what ISIS is doing. But on and on and on.
There should be worldwide demand for countries that now we are seeing actual polls that are coming out, and whether it be 30%, 25%, where your people are causing this destruction. So why is there not pressure on these countries and finger pointing and saying, regardless of what you're doing, if you're kind of turning a blind eye, if you are pushing them to your borders into Syria, why are you doing this and how are you letting this happen? There needs to be focus on these countries because it's going to continually grow and ISIS is going to move.
This is WMFO Medford, I have to say that. Because the standard that we use is whether or not a country is a state sponsor of terrorism. Okay, is it the official government position that we support terrorist activity? Is it the official government position that we want a nuclear weapon? Hello, Iran. Saudi Arabia does not. Okay, and Saudi Arabia has been very, very good at playing both sides in this whole thing.
They're essentially the Switzerland of the Middle East.
We know that they're throwing tons of money
at
various conflicts around the Middle East because they're trying to keep Iran contained. Everybody in the intelligence community knows this. Mm-hmm. The State Department knows this. But the official Saudi Arabian position is that we support the war against ISIS. That's what the government is going to tell you all day long.
Again, but there's a big difference between saying we support the war against ISIS, and I'm not going to say the United States is completely innocent in this. We have stood and said we are against ISIS. Half of the arms that are going through the Middle East are coming from us.
Yeah. Well, there's that, too.
That's the reality of it.
It's messy on the ground.
We have all done this to ourselves.
Yes.
And understanding the position where each of these countries stand with this air quote fight against ISIS, we have created this.
Well, this is probably where the United States ought to simply get out and let Russia go deal with it. If you're willing to live with what
Russia bad.
If you're willing to live with what Russia is likely to do, which is kill everybody within a 500-mile radius, which is pretty much their approach to this. Kill everybody, because if everybody's dead, we know there's no ISIS left.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and yeah, 90% of those people were civilians, but hey, ISIS is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And on some level, that may be the only way that you win this thing.
But as you say, we look to countries to make sure that they're not state-sponsored terrorist group.
And in the case of the Saudis,
ISIS is different. We're not talking about, you know, gone are the days of Al Qaeda and the Taliban, where these essentially were state-funded terrorist groups. Allegedly.
But keep in mind, you know, the United States...
ISIS is very different.
The United States has sponsored some bad things in other parts of the world as well.
Absolutely.
You know, and
I can absolutely agree with that.
And it may not have been an official state position. We may not have sat back and said, yeah, we're here to overthrow, you know, we support overthrowing the Nicaraguan government.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sending a lot of money to the Contras. We don't do that. We just send the money and hope nobody notices. Saudi Arabia gets complicated because the country is run by the royal family. Okay, they're the last word on authority. The royal family is massive. Okay, bin Laden is related to a member of the Saudi royal family. And there are some within the Saudi royal family who are active supporters of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. There are others in the Saudi royal family who want nothing to do with that. So trying to figure out what the official state position of Saudi Arabia is ultimately comes down to whatever their spokesman is saying. And their spokesman is saying, we're opposed to ISIS. We're a friend of the United States. And because we want the oil at good prices, we sit back and say, good enough for us. If you want to delve into it, no, they have not been an ally. Any more than Turkey has been an ally. The whole reason Turkey got involved in the thing.
It's the same thing with trying to say Iran is.
Once we told Turkey they
our
couldn't.
Friend.
Once we told Turkey they couldn't buy cheap ISIS oil anymore, they got in the war, yeah. But they did it so that they could go blow up Kurds.
Of course, President Erdogan wanted to play both sides.
Yeah, this is what's going on in that part of the world. This is why conflicts in that part of the world go on forever, never reach any sort of a meaningful conclusion, and suck all kinds of countries into them.
And seeing with the latest movements of ISIS, and there have been people in the United States in our government that have recently been quoted as saying they're essentially breaking down. It's the same thing we heard when ISIS was losing money and saying they're not really a thing anymore. Just because they're not a large group, they create damage, and we've talked about it so much. They create damage just by having one single person. And this is what they have. I don't want to use the word brainwashed, essentially, but this is what they've built their jihadness on.
They've lost their caliphate. The caliphate is gone. Mm-hmm. Their fake government is gone. Their mint is gone.
No, when we first discussed this, we said, how do you defeat ISIS, essentially, in the most basic ways?
Correct.
You say, get rid of the money.
The first thing you have to do is get rid of the money, which
the
we did. We shut down the flow of oil, mm-hmm. And then you start taking land away from them. Okay? If you take away money and land, you now have no political power left. That doesn't dissuade the bad apples who are a part of ISIS from trying to go and create chaos elsewhere. That's who they are. We're going to be cleaning up this mess for the next 2 decades. At a minimum. At a minimum. So, hold on to your hats. But, if you can get rid of the central power base, and if you can wipe all of those people out, hopefully taking out al-Baghdadi as part of this whole thing, then you severely limit their ability to do anything. And ultimately, they have to roll into the al-Nusayr front, or they have to roll into al-Shabaab, or they have to roll into al-Qaeda,
mm-hmm.
And then we can get to go after those people again.
What is the latest on al-Baghdadi and where his movements?
Al-Baghdadi hasn't been heard from
for
in
months. Yeah.
So there were
questions that came up possibly about him being killed or his inside people.
There was a statement attributed to him that came out in late November, mm-hmm. which may or may not have actually been him, but at least put him back on the radar and made it suggest that al-Baghdadi is still alive and still somewhere directing this thing. As it is
well, for so
right
long,
now, this
we
guy's
seeing,
a ghost.
We were seeing his face as the cover boy
yeah.
of ISIS.
Yeah, nobody...
And pushing the jihad.
I'm surprised they haven't found him yet.
Yeah. Well, today in sports, we learned it could actually be the shoe, not the athlete, that wins marathons. Nike just unveiled a shoe designed specifically to break the two-hour marathon mark. The shoe is part of the company's big moonshot to get the marathon world record down to under 2 hours, which was announced late last year. The current world record stands at 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 57 seconds. To achieve this, Nike has signed up three elite runners from Kenya and Ethiopia for the two-hour marathon project it is calling Breaking 2. To make Breaking 2 a reality, Nike's in-house team of experts have honed in on advances in footwear and apparel design. Their efforts are showcased in the Nike Zoom Vaporfly Elite, a new running shoe custom made for the three Nike-endorsed athletes currently training in a fixed loop in Italy. While the Nike Zoom Vaporfly Elite will not be available for retail, the company is bringing some of its new technology features to the masses. In early June, Nike will launch a slate of new shoes that it says is more ideal for marathon racing and training. The marquee shoe is at a cost of $250, called the Nike Zoom Vaporfly 4%. Which Nike says is both lighter and more efficient than other shoes that is previously developed for racing. So I thought this story was incredibly interesting because New York Times did a sort of follow-up article to the announcement of this and kind of comparing when new technology comes out for training. So they use the comparison of the Beijing Olympics with swimming and how everybody had to wear a certain swim gear that it was uniform across the board so that it would give you no advantage because it's been known that there's certain features or designs that could give you a competitive advantage. They're kind of looking now and putting a spotlight on this new Nike shoe, which is trying to push itself as this elite running shoe that can break all of these barriers and world records. And should they be banned? What is the line between technology and competitive advantage?
Well, it's an electric motor and a bike. We know that. So at what point do we start enhancing an athlete's abilities with... This was the argument against Oscar Pistorius competing in the Olympics, was there were a number of trainers and athletes who said, you know, what he does when he competes is completely different from what we do because the blades give him an advantage.
Yes.
And it took some sports scientists and doctors looking at it and saying, no, it doesn't. He's working just as hard as you are for him to be included.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that shoes would necessarily fall into the category of augmenting performance unless there's some sort of, you know, rubber bouncy thing in there that makes you...
No, and I understand. I mean, when you have these advancements in technology and they can give you... But we're talking about, you know, 0.5 seconds that are going to make a difference between a world record or first place or second place.
Yeah, I mean, so go out and buy the good shoes.
So there
shoes.
Was such big controversy in Beijing and then... Or was it London and then Beijing, where there was controversy over what was going to be required of the swimmers? And when you're training with a certain product, whether it be the swim gear or a certain shoe, and then you adjust to the standard that you have to do in competing.
Well, prior to that, there was a lot of shenanigans going on in the swimming competitions.
Because, well, there was a difference between the full body suits and
you had people wearing full body suits, you had people wearing Speedos, you had, you know, people wearing all these different kinds of hats. And it was like, it is understood in competitive swimming where, you know, a 100th of a second is the difference between winning and losing a match, that aerodynamics is a huge part of your success in the pool.
Of course.
So it got to a point where the Olympic Committee is looking at it, and the International Swim Community is looking at it, and they're saying, some of you folks are getting an advantage from these swimsuits. They make you more aerodynamic, or they do this, or they do that. And they said, everybody gets the same thing. Okay, no more of this. I get a special hat. Mm-hmm. I get a special...
Yes, because to me, there's a big difference between that and a shoe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I run. There's definitely a difference in the length of what I can run in certain shoes and how they feel.
Yeah.
And I understand.
You're not running a marathon in heels.
The people behind the scientific process at Nike are some of the best of the best, and they're trying to create these products that are going to give you that little extra something that are going to shave, you know, 1 or 2 minutes off of your time.
This is their business. Their business is improving athletic performance through their products. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they're trying to do here. So you're basically saying, if you're Nike, we're going to give these three athletes the best shoe technology advantage in the world in the marathons where they compete, and all the rest of you runners can suck it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you need the governing bodies of these marathons to step in and say, no, Nike, you're not.
Well, that's the difference between giving your shoe available to your sponsored athletes compared to having it available for everybody.
Correct.
Because that's what, if we're talking about advancements in technology with regards to athletic equipment or sportswear, it needs to be available to everybody at the elite level.
If you want to break a two-hour marathon, either make 30 pairs of shoes and give them to a bunch of runners and have them run a marathon by themselves, or have this done in parallel. I think they want it to be London or Boston or New York or Chicago or one of the big ones. That's fine. Your runners are not entered in the regular marathon, all right? They're there doing their own thing. And if they finish ahead of everybody else, that doesn't count. So they get their Nike money, and you get to go get your marketing campaign, and the legitimate runners who aren't being given super secret special shoes get to compete for the prize money. That would make it fair.
Solution.
If I was a competitive runner looking at a marathon with runners wearing these shoes, I would be raising all kinds of hell. I think Kenyans are going to win anyway.
Of course.
Anyway. You know, but there may be some angry Eritrean out there who could lodge a complaint about this.
Hmm. Well, in food news, we learn the worst can be found under the golden arches. McDonald's and other traditional fast food giants may be losing market share to fast casual spots in regional chains, but a new study has confirmed why some consumers are stepping away from big brands. According to a new report, consumers surveyed that McDonald's has the lowest quality of food out of the big fast food restaurants. The chain was ranked at number 12 spot out of 12 in a review conducted by the RBC Capital Markets, a global investment bank. Today, together with researchers in the firm Mission Measurement, RBC asked 1,000 people to determine how they ranked top U.S. sandwich and burger chains based on the quality of food served. In-N-Out Burger was ranked number one, followed by Chick-fil-A and Culver's. Sonic was ninth, followed by Jack in the Box. Burger King and McDonald's was in the last slot. Based on the survey results, millennial customers are rejecting the national big chains in favor of smaller eateries that have, quote, strong people cultures and appealing treats, end quote. Perfect millennial quote. I had to give you that one.
Freaking answers.
But according to the survey results, McDonald's, which currently has more than 36,000 locations around the globe, has a lot of work to do if they want to impress younger consumers. The chain recently enacted plans to launch both a new mobile ordering platform and improve food quality. The latter would incorporate a new line of high-quality signature burgers. McDonald's also plans on start using sustainably raised beef in more locations. So, I mean, McDonald's, you finally put the chicken in the chicken. We found out last week that Subway
putting lots of tasty, tasty soybean filler in their
surprise.
Chicken.
Surprise. Yeah.
Here's the problem, and I've said this before. McDonald's, you can play around with your menu all you want. You can add in breakfast. You can do all these other things. The reason that you are losing ground, the reason that you are losing share, is because your customer has no connection with their food. When I walk into Chipotle, the food is right in front of me. I can see it. When I walk into Panera, the food is right in front of me. I can see it. I can't see all the cold cuts and the rest of that. When I walk into Subway, everything is right there in front of me.
And you know it's being made right away.
And I can watch somebody making it. Mm-hmm. When I go to McDonald's, I get a bag with food in it, and I have no idea where it came from, when it was cooked, how long it's been there. Quality varies wildly from day to day. Some days the French fries are good. Some days the French fries are inedible.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken McNuggets exist in a spectrum of edibility, ranging from freshly...
Yeah, you had a douses in the sweet and sour sauce.
Ranging from freshly made, soft, golden brown, delicious, to hard as a rock, did you even thaw this before you threw it in the fryer later?
But I feel like maybe this was within the past year, we were discussing how McDonald's was rolling out their new artisan chicken sandwiches.
No artisans were harmed in the making of that sandwich.
Quickly, that has gone by the wayside. I think people connect McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's with it's faster and it's cheaper. When in actual reality, if you're completely nixing out the dollar menu, which you know all of that is complete junk, if you're looking at your value, air quote value, the sandwiches are what, $6-$7? You add in the soda, make it a meal. Now it's about $10.
Yeah.
You can get the same exact thing. Exactly, at a Chipotle. All right, I won't say Chipotle.
They got their own set of problems.
Which is actually funny. My boyfriend wanted burritos today. We were going back and forth, Chipotle or Qdoba. And because of you, we went to Qdoba.
I was at Smoky Bones up at the North Shore Shopping Center the other night, having some tasty ribs. And I went outside to have a cigarette. There's a Chipotle next door. It's like two people in the Chipotle. Smoky Bones. It's like
sad.
It's like Sunday evening. The barbecue place is full. Nobody is at Chipotle. Gee, I wonder why that is. But the concept behind Chipotle is sound. And this is where McDonald's continues to miss the mark. Their entire business is based around speed. And that speed is achieved by hiding the production process from the customer. And McDonald's came of age in a time when Americans didn't think about how their food was made. We didn't care. Mm-hmm. You give me a burger in 20 seconds, I'm in.
There weren't a constant amount of studies that are popping up on social media about your food and where it comes from, and really a focus on health.
And it's tasty enough that it's not as tasty as it used to be, but it's tasty enough. But I had a friend that worked at McDonald's and stole a case of burgers, threw them on his grill at home. And let me tell you something. Some of the best hamburgers I've ever had. But you get the stuff that they make in the store, and it's like, what have you done to this burger? How did you take delicious beef and turn it into this? And this is the problem, is Americans now don't want their food production to be hidden from them. They want to see it. I want to see it be made. This is one of the things that Krispy Kreme donuts had going for it.
Mm-hmm.
Was you could see the donuts coming
People
off
were
the line,
all watching it, of course.
And there's some guy standing there hucking free donuts at you, like a crack dealer. You know, here, try one of these. You'll be back for more. And oh boy, damn, if we weren't.
And this is why there's so many of these, you know, small chain concepts and quick service, because they are. And in the time that you're sitting in your car going through the entire loop at a McDonald's, that's the same time you're going to be walking in a Panera in and out and getting a freshly made sandwich.
You look at pretty much any food franchise that's come up in the last few years, whether we're talking about pretzels or we're talking about yogurt or we're talking about sandwiches or we're talking about whatever, the food is in front of you. It's like being at a salad bar. There's a piece of glass there. You can see the food. And you can say to yourself, yes, this food looks fresh, or no, that doesn't look good. I want something else. You can see people making the food. The only places where this doesn't happen are Dunkin' Donuts. It's a donut. We don't care. We know it's bad for us. McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King. There may be some other big chain out there that I'm forgetting. Those three are losing market share. And because Wendy's and Burger King are 2 and 3 nationwide in sales, it doesn't get as noticed as when McDonald's goes down. Burger King and Wendy's also have the ability to roll out endless stunt food promotions. We have chicken fries now, or we have chicken cookies now, or we're putting sriracha and bacon in our milkshakes, or Taco Bell's another one where you don't see the food get made. Hey, here's a chalupa with a piece of chicken as a tortilla shell.
Which I've tried it. I hate to say it was delicious.
Okay. Or here are your Doritos nachos or your Doritos taco.
But that's what they've now had to...
This is all stunt
evolve
food.
Evolve to.
McDonald's can't do stunt food because McDonald's... The back of a McDonald's house...
The Shamrock Shake is as far as it's getting.
The back of a McDonald's house, the kitchen, has been engineered within an inch of its life. The reason they couldn't do breakfast for so long was they couldn't figure out how to get more stuff in there to make it. They're overhauling all of their ice cream machines now because the Flurry machines are always broken. This is a big deal for them. And infrastructure changes at one restaurant happen at all restaurants simultaneously. So they're not that nimble. For McDonald's to do what it needs to do, it needs to fundamentally rethink and re-engineer every bit of its operations, and it's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It just won't.
So I don't think people can get on board with the connotation of or image what you think McDonald's is to that point.
The only thing they can do is fall back on things like artisan chicken and hope that their customers don't know any better. But the reality is their customers do know better.
Mm-hmm.
So McDonald's, they're almost at a point where you have to say, look, we're going to stop trying to be what we're not, okay? We're a fast food place. We got 15 different variations of the Big Mac for you. Here you go. You go to In-N-Out Burger, they make your burger fresh. Everybody knows that.
In-N-Out Burger is
You can get your burger any way that you want it, and that's one of the things that people love about it. McDonald's is an assembly line. It is based on factory mentality. And it's just out of touch with what people expect from their food in 2017.
And continue.
I wish them well. I don't see an easy way out, but I wish them well. In technology news, the world got its first look at Elon Musk's Hyperloop today, as images of the test track were shared at the Middle East Rail Conference in Dubai. The proof of concept test track outside of Las Vegas will see its first test later this year, in which people will be ferried in pods through low pressure tubes at high speeds. Dubai is expected to be the site of the first functioning Hyperloop, which will connect it to Abu Dhabi, allowing commuters to make the 100-mile trip in 12 minutes. 12 minutes to go 100 miles in a Hyperloop.
Do you think this is going to revolutionize transportation at some point? Maybe not in our lifetime, but be reality? Because we've discussed this before on the show and what it actually means. Because it's a lot on your body. It isn't you just, you know, hop in a tube and you go. Like you're putting something in the, drive-through at the bank and it just shoots up. It's a lot of pressure on the body. And what
as I understand,
technology...
As I understand, you're not really that aware of it in the same way that... If you're on one of those maglev roller coasters that accelerates from like 0 to 60, mm-hmm. like in 3 seconds, there's an initial whoosh, but then you just adjust to it. So, I mean, we get in airplanes. They go faster than a Hyperloop.
Now, what is the distance you're talking about, Abu Dhabi to
100 miles.
Dubai?
100 miles. And they'll do it in 12 minutes, which, how fast is that? 100 miles in 12 minutes?
It's fast.
That's 270 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
to get that in 12 minutes. But
I wouldn't be surprised if I saw... Disney jumping on something like this and connecting all there.
If you can do that, everybody's going to want to use it.
Of course.
Because the traffic in between Abu Dhabi and Dubai is nightmarish.
Mm-hmm. That's why all the rich people have the helicopters.
I could see, how far is it from Boston to New York City?
It's driving 4 hours.
A
little under.
Mileage-wise, it's like 180 miles, mm-hmm. right? So imagine that you could get to New York from Boston in 20 minutes.
No, it's more than that. It's about 200.
It's about 200? So imagine that you can do that in half an hour. You get in the Hyperloop, you're in New York in half an hour. People be doing this all day long.
Now, is it like a seat? I mean, you're laying down.
I think it's... are you laying? Sitting up. I think you're sitting in these things.
In a tube?
Yeah. Well, no, you're in a pod in a tube.
Yes.
So you're not necessarily aware...